everyone. I'm Ashley McManus, Senior Director of Global Marketing at SmartEye. Welcome to the Human-Centric AI Podcast, where each episode we interview thought leaders doing cutting-edge work in the AI space. A little bit about us. For over 20 years, SmartEye has developed AI in the form of eye-tracking technology that understands, supports, and predicts a person's intentions and actions. By carefully studying eye, facial, and head movement, our tech can draw conclusions about a person's awareness and mental state. Today, our technology is embedded in next-generation vehicles, leading the way towards human-centric mobility through driver monitoring systems and interior sensing solutions. Every year, 1.3 million people around the world die in road crashes, according to the World Health Organization. More than 20% of these fatalities are estimated to be alcohol-related, a global problem that demands comprehensive solutions. Driven by technical enhancements in artificial intelligence and global regulatory efforts, driver monitoring systems are fast becoming a leading human-centric automotive safety system. Initially focused on detecting distracted and drowsy driving, the foundations of these systems may offer keys to detecting and mitigating driver impairment. Today, the prevalent measure to determine alcohol intoxication, blood alcohol concentration, or BAC, is a standard that was developed decades ago. Critical research is being conducted by government bodies, the automotive industry, technology companies, and academia to determine more effective approaches. In a recent event hosted by SmartEye, we explored the state of alcohol intoxication research and opportunities to leverage evolving DMS technology to enhance road safety. What is the state of the art in impairment detection? Can we do more to mitigate harm with advanced technologies that exist today? What are the technological, societal, and political challenges that we'll need to overcome? And when will we get there? We gathered industry experts and leading researchers for a live panel discussion on the current state of intoxicated driving research. Let's listen in to learn more.
At SmartEye, we are on a mission to bridge the gap between humans and machines, and specifically on automotive, we are on a mission to save lives by building driver monitoring solutions and interior sensing solutions that can really understand what is happening with the driver and can help vehicles intervene signals such as distraction and drowsiness, and one day, intoxication. Sadly, according to the World Health Organization, 1.3 million people around the world die in a road crash every single year. And more than 20% of these fatalities are estimated to be alcohol related. And so intoxication is a really complex problem. It really needs a comprehensive solution. So we're going to be diving and focusing on that topic today. So I am really excited to kick this off and see where the state of the research is. So I'll start with introductions of our panel. Owasa, I'd love for you to go first. Please tell us a little bit about who you are, your background, and of your connection to some of this research.
Thank you. Yes, I'm Åsa Forsman, and I'm a senior researcher in traffic safety at the Swedish National Road and Transport Research Institute. So that's VTI for short. And I've been working here for almost 20 years now. My main interest is alcohol and drugs in traffic, and I've been studying the prevalence of drunk driving in general and fatal crashes. Also conducted risk calculations, analysis of crash databases, and worked with evaluations of different safety measures, such as interlock programs and enforcement strategies. I think this in-vehicle detection system is really the next step forward. So I'm looking forward to participate in this panel discussion today.
Thank you for joining us. Rickard, I'd love for you to go next.
Yeah, Rickard Fredriksson. I work for Trafikverket, which is the Swedish Transport Administration in Sweden. And I am a vehicle safety advisor in general, but I also represent Sweden in Euro NCAP on the board there and on the several working groups. And specifically, I chair the Occupant Status Monitoring Group, where we developed a driver monitoring protocol that will be launched next January for all new vehicle models. And for now, it's only distraction, drowsiness, strokes and sudden sickness, but I'm thrilled to see the possibilities of incorporating intoxication in the future. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us. Henrik.
My name is Henrik Lind. I'm heading the research organization here at SmartEye. We are, of course, eager to develop new safety assistant technologies. We have been working a lot with Euro NCAP and these new features that will be introduced in 2023. But also, we are, of course, very eager to work on this technology with intoxication detection. And we are, among others, collaborating with VTI in a program called Fit to Drive, where we collect data for intoxication and attention, by the way. So this is really thrilling for us.
Thank you, Henrik. And last but not least, Brian.
I'm Brian Reamer from MIT. I've been involved in driving safety research for the best part of 25 years at this point, MIT for 19 plus. Founded and lead the EBT consortium, which is really focused on trying to understand how drivers are behaving with advanced technologies in the vehicle. I am not an expert on intoxication, much more in the distraction automation areas, but very much understand the sensor fusion side and how AI and human behavior in vehicles are going to need to come together to detect things like alcohol impairment in real time in vehicles in the future, if we're going to be successful and robust in doing this over the long term.
Great. Yeah, and we've been collaborating with you guys for a number of years now, and it's an amazing consortium of tier ones and OEMs and researchers, and it's a great organization to be part of. So Lessa, kick us off here. How do we define intoxication? Like, what's included, what's not included?
I would say we focus on alcohol. So as I operate from Sweden, we have a legal limit of 0.02. Yeah. So for me, I think intoxication is really if you have been drinking alcohol at all. We have also seen in previous studies that the risk of being killed in a car crash is elevated already for low alcohol concentrations, and then, of course, increases rather fast with increasing concentrations. So I think it's important to have this in mind, but I know, of course, it's different in different countries.
And does that include, I mean, this is obviously very focused on alcohol, But what about, you know, drugs and other substances? Is that usually included in the research as well?
Yes, we usually include different things because it's different how we could detect it, for example, and it's a different legislation. It's different how the police can enforce it and so on. So more and more, I think we talk about both alcohol and other types of drugs, and that's becoming increasingly important. But still, there are quite a lot that also differ between these two.
And what would you say is the kind of the state of intoxication research today? Like, give us an example out of your day. Like, what do you focus on in your research?
I've focused quite a lot on both enforcement and programs to reduce recidivism, like interlock programs. But I think we are at the sort of shift. We see the traditional measures are very important, but they have the limit of them. Of course, mostly they rely on police enforcement, and that they have limited resources, of course. So I really think now that the next step is to have in-vehicle systems. So that's very exciting. But I think I leave technical details about the system to the other panelists.
Yeah. So Henrik, I found the study that, you know, this collaboration we have with VTI just so fascinating. So maybe, Henrik, you can summarize. And I know we have the data, but we're still in the midst of analyzing it. But can you summarize what the study is about and what kind of sensors and technologies we're using to come at the problem?
Yes, of course, Verona. Yeah, so we have We have a study going on right now. We have collected data with more than 30 participants, which were having different levels of alcohol concentration and, of course, increasing such alcohol concentration during the test. And we had a vehicle which was equipped with sensors, especially camera sensors, I would say, but also GPS information about vehicle speed and the way you handle the car, so to say. So we think this is going to be a very important, you may say, database for the future, because this is our first, data collection where we have also visual information from the driver. We can, we could potentially, and we are, of course, looking into this data right now and analyzing it. And we can already see that there are some differences when you become more and more intoxicated, so to say. If you look into the normal studies, I would say that we have seen some studies that are, intoxicated drivers above 1.0. This study was more on the lower level, so to say, up to 1.0 in BAC level. And that's really interesting to dive into and see what we can do.
Yeah, I found it was really fascinating because we basically recruited drivers to this racetrack, right, in Sweden. And essentially, there was a safety driver too. It's important to mention that. But basically, with every lap, we would give the drivers a little bit more alcohol. And so you could progressively see the difference in behavior and attention and engagement. And I think that's just really interesting. So, Brian, I'm a big believer that the ultimate solution for intoxication is going to be a multimodal one. And you've spent a lot of time collecting multiple, modalities and sensors in a vehicle. So can you talk a little bit about why it's so important to think about sensor fusion and what are the challenges that come with that?
So, I mean, alcohol impairment and other drug impairment is obviously a major issue here on U.S. and international roads. When we think about what we're trying to often detect here, we're tied to a standard, the BAC standard, that is at this point well over 100 years old. And when we think about sensor fusion and AI, and obviously laws are written for a reason at a point in time, we're often trying to detect a level of impairment that is tied to a standard we built back over in the early 1900s, in some sense before. So when we think about sensor fusion, how can we use all of the sensing that we have from interior cab sensing, cabin monitoring sensing, forward sensing when you're thinking about cars that are equipped with automation, to begin to form a new standard for impairment broadly forward, where we can begin to use the automation and in-cab sensing collectively together, fused together to make smarter decisions. The hard part about this is it moves and tries to move beyond the current state of legislation globally, which is all tied to this classic BAC standard. So if we really want to make inroads in detecting and mitigating impairment on the roads, perhaps we need to think about measures that are much more robust today and bringing various automotive sensing technology together, where detecting blood alcohol concentration from the breathalyzer tests is really a classic benchmark that we obviously want to be highly correlated to. Perhaps we can do even better if we move beyond this standard of the early 1900s, leveraging the AI sensing, vision sensing, radar sensing, LIDAR, all the fit metrics that we commonly use with automated vehicle platforms to fuse something more robust together. Now, but again, has to work with that policy side changing and enabling it as well.
Have you considered using interior radar for intoxication detection? Henrik, have we? And then I also want to ask our other panelists if they have looked into that as well.
Well, yes, it's a very good question. Thank you very much for it. Yes, as long as we can see something that is of interest with the radar, it is really interesting, of course, to look into this. And we plan to include radars also in our future data collections. So that is a very important question, I would say, and also you've got an answer here. And it is also linked to what Brian said, that hopefully we can get more data using more sensors. We can fuse them. We can apply the AI that we have done also within the drowsiness detection and actually get very good and reliable system output from that, for detection output.
Great. Thank you. All right, Ricard, walk us through the role of legislation, regulation. Where do we stand? And also perhaps in your, you know, when you kind of collaborate with car manufacturers, are they hesitant to deploy these technologies? And if so, why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. It's we haven't succeeded in developing a regulation to include an alcolock in every car. We have the technology now, but it's been resistance against it. And also from NCAP side, when we talk to car manufacturers about it, it's a very sensitive subject. They would rather let the police handle this. So they don't really want to get into that. But then we see that a camera or other sensors that could detect an inattentive driver rather than the blood alcohol concentration could be a much better way, because then you don't really have to tell the driver that he or she is drunk. It's just that he's not fit to drive.
And how is Euro NCAP, for example, thinking about all of this?
Yeah, what we're doing already next year for distraction and drowsiness is that if we see that the driver is not attentive, that we make the car more sensitive, for example, the auto brake or lane support system, that they react earlier. And we could do the same if we can detect him. So that's how we're thinking about it as the first step. And this, I think we could do pretty fast, because we don't need to have an exact level like the blood alcohol test, the legal test. As also said, as soon as we detect an intoxicated driver, we could make the car more sensitive, because he or she is not attentive driver. Then.
Yeah, I think that this is a very interesting approach. It's more kind of coming at it from like a driver attention, driver engagement mm-hmm. perspective. Asa, how do you think the car should react? Like, what should, you know, assume we have the perfect sensing technology. What should the car do?
Well, this is quite difficult. Of course, the best would be if you could detect already from the start, and that the car doesn't start like an alcohol interlock works today. But I think the intervention must go in hand in hand with the reliability of the detection, of course, also of alcohol. So I realize that there are practical problems here. But I would also like to say that I think that alcohol and driving is something that many people, at least in Sweden, Nordic countries, many European countries, think is totally unacceptable. So I think that there will be discussion if we have a system in the car that actually can detect alcohol impairment, that it will be very unresponsible to let the driver continue to drive. For many groups, I think that will be a discussion. But of course, I realize that it might not work. At least not from the beginning, but.
Yeah, because I imagine there's a range of responses. The car can basically kind of beep, right? If it detects an inattentive driver, whatever the reason is, all the way to saying, you know what, you are just not fit to drive. Car's not going to turn on. Where do you think we should draw the line?
I don't know. I think that this is something, of course, we need to do, need to test. I think that's one of the biggest challenges when we have the technical solution how it also depends on how far we have come with the ADAS system and other sort of systems, so what we can do with the car.
But maybe I can fill in there. I just want to agree with Åsa that in the beginning we should do less when it's not as reliable, but we can make the car more sensitive with the ADAS systems and so on. And when it gets more and more reliable, then we can do more and more. And eventually, I agree, we should, if we're 100% certain we have a drunk driver, the car should be stopped. And then, as you say, also, when we have the technology in the car, it will be harder to discuss against that, because then you're already taken the cost for the hardware and everything. So it's really unresponsible at that time to not do it. So.
Yeah, Brian, I want also to chime in because it's kind of the same question if you detect an extremely drowsy driver, right? Like, how should the car respond? So what's your view on that?
And it's really more of a continuum. How do we monitor, manage, and motivate drivers to be more attentive, more responsible, less impaired, so that we overall enhance safety? And the end of the day is we're really looking at a range of driver support systems that are aiming to support drivers in first making better decisions. And then, as Ricard says, as the systems get better, then perhaps coming in as interlocks later on, we have a high degree of robustness. But the technology as it exists today, you know, probably isn't robust enough that we can interlock a vehicle as frequently as we'd like to. So obviously, it's really easy to detect someone who is extremely incapable of driving, but those borderline conditions where, you know, much like the old coffee cup reminder with fatigue, just trying to provide an indicator to the driver that maybe you're not optimal is a first step in the direction as the technology and centrifugation gets better over the long haul. But we really need to be looking at these problems as a continuum over time, not looking at a holy grail and a being able to solve it tomorrow, because these are really tough, complex systems that will take years to evolve.
I love that idea of like acknowledging that, yeah, the technology is going to get better. The solutions are going to get better. It's okay to start with, you know, the minimum viable product, so to say.
Yeah, and that improves the data connectivity over time. It gives you more data, more reliable data, allows you to tune the AI systems better over time. Unfortunately, everybody would love a solution now, but the best solutions will evolve over time. And it's really moving beyond the starting line to collecting, you know, real large naturalistic data that allows us to train AI systems over the long.
So we have a whole bunch of questions around the technology. So Sophie is asking, what inputs are most reliable to detect intoxication, alcohol, and drug use from a research perspective? Henrik, do you want to take that? Obviously, at SMART, we've spent a lot of time focused on computer like vision sensors, but do you want to comment on what other sensors look promising? And
I can do that. Yeah, of course. I mean, if you look into the research arena and also what has been done, we know that there is a lot of work related to the breathalyzers. And those are very good today, I would say. I mean, it's a quite reliable technology, even if there are some problems with it. And our thought is that we could actually, you know, gain and let's say a more robust breathalyzer by adding also vision to that technology. In the future, we may see also you know, fully only vision-based technology and detection. We are not there yet. So, but this is really an important area, of course. If you look into drug use, I think we need to look more on the way that people are behaving in the vehicle. So the handling of the vehicle, how do they actually drive the vehicle on the road? And of course, that is also an important input for alcohol use. So you know, combining all these features all together into some kind of, like Richard said, fit to drive assessment, that would be very, very important for us in the future, I think, as a community. Automotive community.
Yeah, and I want to ask a follow-on question from Boyana. Are there any like ocular differences between, you know, dynamic ocular kind of behavior differences between drowsy drivers and intoxicated drivers?
Well, I think that this is exactly what we're working on today. We are looking into the differences that are available. There's always a problem of confusion in between different variables. And of course, if you look into the tests that you do related to, you know, when you collect data for intoxication, it's a little bit hard to go the reverse way. That is, you get, so to say, more and more sober and you continue to drive. But this is something that we need to do in order to separate, let's say the ocular dynamic factors from drowsiness, for instance. So I mean, if we want to separate, we have to have quite a lot of tests being done in order to understand the relationship in between these. Then it's also a question, I think, which is on more a level of, do we need to separate? That is also something that we have to discuss, because if we don't need to separate, but we actually can say, okay, yeah, if you're drowsy, you basically, if you're really, really drowsy, you basically drive as bad as if you're alcohol intoxicated. So that is also something that we need to discuss within the community, I think.
Henrik, if I can chime in, I really think your need is well pushed. There is a desperate need across both the policy community and industry to separate needs from wants. So do we need to separate different types of impairment? No. Do we want to? Yes. Is the best way to start by saying, hey, we need a large, a broad approach to impairment detection. Doesn't matter. And then take the scalpel of that over the long term and move towards the wants. And I think we've been very much encapsulated by looking towards what we want as opposed to starting with what we absolutely need. And I think that's the vast difference that both the industry and the policy community need to take looking in the next few years forward, especially with some of the legislation changes happening here in the U.S.
Asa, I think you were trying to chime in. Do you have thoughts on that too?
Well, I talked about the needs of separating. I think, of course, there are different countermeasures when you detect some inattention. If you really are drunk, then you, of course, should probably not continue driving. If you're drowsy, you could take a short break and a nap and maybe continue driving. So from that point of view, of course, preferably it would be good if you could separate them. But if we, with the other type of interventions that we've been talking about today, I think it's not equal necessary.
Ricard, I think you were also trying to chime in.
No, I just want to agree, at least in the first phase, I don't think we need to separate. We can just say that we have an inattentive driver, a driver not fit to drive, and we make countermeasures to make the journey safer from the vehicle point. So at least for the near future, that's how I see it, to make it safer.
So Dr. Andre has an amazing question. What is the state of the art regarding false alarms? And is there a risk to discriminate against certain groups or illnesses by falsely tagging them as intoxication? And I actually want to broaden this question a little bit more. I know from our work in driver monitoring and interior sensing that the biggest bottleneck to all of this is the data. So I guess, Brian, I'll start with you, because you have a consortium of these competitors, basically. You've gotten them to join this consortium, and you have over the last, you know, I don't know, 6+ years, maybe 8, 10, I don't know, been collecting this incredible data set that can act as a benchmark. So I'm just curious about, how do you think we should get this data, and how do you think we should avoid some of the things that Dr. Andre brought up?
So first, I think it's important to note the AVT Consortium is very focused on really on automation assistance technologies, and we do not hopefully have a whole lot of data around intoxication. But I think when you get to false alarms, that's where the difference between what you need to alert the driver with and perhaps throwing an indicator on the dashboard to say maybe you're not fit to drive, but alerting the driver and the balance of when you do take some other corrective action that begins to augment the control of the vehicle, perhaps, you know, over the long haul, allowing automation to pull that car over. That's the balancing point today, is that because we know we're going to be working with systems that are going to have a larger than interested false alarm rate, you know, there isn't a lot of risk of a false alarm that tells an individual that they may not be driving perfectly. There is a lot more risk of the car taking corrective action. So while right. we really want the car to take corrective action, we may not be there right now. And we can, however, though, begin to alert the driver. And that, you know, doesn't necessarily falsely target them as being intoxicated. It falsely targets them as perhaps not optimally driving. And you know what? Many of us often do realize that perhaps we're not paying enough attention. And it's a lot of factors that go in there. You know, we got to look at this, the early stage of the fatigue coffee cup side, where you could literally drive down the road and trick the system a lot better than you could today. Now, how do you collect the data? Unfortunately, it becomes to, you know, perhaps that each automotive industry player can't go at this alone. We are looking at data that really will need to come from a broad swath of use conditions to create data sets that can work together and be used to use the power of sensor fusion and AI to come together to extract value from these data sets and enhance sensors over the long haul. And again, you know, none of this is going to happen quickly, but the key being is bringing the systems together so you can begin to very much mine the data over decades to enhance the fidelity of the systems and move from those needs to the wants.
One of the things that we've really prioritized first at Affectiva and also at SmartEye is being very intentional about the, you know, not just the quantity of data we collect, but the diversity of the data too. And I think it comes back to this question again, like how do you make sure you're not accidentally and unintentionally discriminating against groups of people? So I think it's a very complex problem, because it's not just about, you know, collecting data from intoxicated drivers. You have to ensure that we have equal representation of women and men and age groups and, you know, maybe confounding factors like other illnesses, and that then it becomes really exponentially hard to collect that data.
Yeah, and this is where the privacy issues get really important, is that, you know, the best way to do this is actually take in-cab data and say, okay, what do we think this individual is? But do we want to invade individuals' privacies by collecting sensor data from the inside of the vehicle and bringing that back to a pool together? You know, there's a lot of big questions here between privacy and public good that we need some guidance on. There is no perfect answer. I mean, obviously, yeah. You know, as a society, we want to mitigate all the harm on the roads, but we also want to protect, you know, individuals' privacy at the same time. So this is, you know, this is a really interesting public policy debate that we need some solutions for. And whatever those solutions are, we need to work under those guidance. But I think what is key is the policy mechanisms of BAC are not the policy mechanisms we need to be looking at forward. We need the public sector to come together with the private sector and begin to think about what the future needs to look like here.
Ricard, I would love for you to comment on the whole kind of user privacy and also consumer acceptance of some of this work. What's the sentiment? Like, do consumers want this, not want this?
I'm not sure, but it's very important to stress that we should never say, for driver monitoring as a whole, we should never save any images, for example. It's only numeric data that we handle and possibly store. So that is a delicate topic to handle when we launch these systems. But only in a few years, this is coming into regulation in Europe with the general safety regulation. So it will come. And then we have the GDPR that is very strict in Europe too, that we need to follow. So it's in a way that's not a topic in that way, but it's important to explain well to the car owners and the car drivers, for sure.
Asa, can I ask you about like the role of simulators, I guess? And then Henrik, my follow-on question to you will be data synthesis. So I guess does VTI do a lot of research in car simulators?
Yes, we do. And we have done some experiments with alcohol. And I think, of course, if you look at the cameras and other sensors, that could easily be done in a simulator. One complication is when we want to look at drugs other than alcohol, of course, because they are legal in Sweden. If we don't, some medicines, of course, we can look at, but otherwise this is a problem. But as far as it goes for alcohol, we could be used. But if we also want to sensor fusion with other type of sensor driver behavior and things like that, then it's more difficult.
And Henrik, I know we've been investing a lot in data synthesis. So what's the role that data synthesis can play in kind of helping us understand and tackle this problem?
Well, I think it can support to some extent in this problem. I don't think that data synthesis is maybe the best way to go forward, because this is really individual, and we need to understand on the individual level, so to say, and also on the population level, what are the factors that we need to find, so in order to actually define that a person is intoxicated. We can, of course, use synthesis to mimic these factors, and then when we have found them, and we can make a data set that could be used for the future for validation and so on, where you cannot really see who it is on the images. That is actually one of the problems with GDPR. We are a little bit limited here in Europe right now on this topic. But it's not a big problem when it comes to research, so that is okay. If you look into using simulators, if I may address that question also, if you look into simulators, it's really interesting, because you could potentially do even more drunk drivers in the simulator, so to say, and it's not that dangerous as being out on a real test track and trying out 2.5 BAC level, which is really, really high. So that is really an important part, and we are looking into, can we use these simulators? We also know that when you come into this utilization of also other types of sensors like radars and stuff, it's really important to have the real vehicle, because you get bounces and all sorts of things that could interact with your measurements that you don't see in the simulator, but you will see on the real road. So it is, simulators are important in this, but we also need real road data, and that's the most important part, I think.
So Ruben has a good question. Can you perhaps tell us a bit more detail the procedure surrounding the collection of intoxicated data?
Yeah, so anyway, the procedures is of course delicate, because you need to be on the test track. You need to be, and actually it was like this in Sweden, that we couldn't even drive with intoxicated drivers in the vehicle, because that is illegal. As soon as you put your foot in the vehicle on the driver's seat and you start driving, it's illegal, even on the test track. So we needed to have also an agreement from the government in order to do this. And that, of course, together with all the COVID-19 stuff actually delayed us quite a lot in this project. But anyway, it has worked out to the positive. And I think that if you're interested in how we actually do it, you are welcome to contact us and or VTI, and we can tell you, because it's quite a long process, so to say. You need to, of course, measure with a breathalyzer before you go out on the test. You may have different tests occurring during the time you're on the test track, and there's a lot into it. So it's a good question, but it's hard to answer on a short.
So We don't just recruit drivers coming out of bars at night.
No, we don't.
I feel like that would be an amazing data set, but obviously there's all sorts of privacy concerns and consent concerns. Okay, we can go on forever, but we need to wrap up. So I would love for you, I'll just go around the table and ask, what is the one thing you're most excited about as it relates to this space? And Brian, I'll start with you.
I think it's the ability to fuse different data sources together and to be able to increasingly leverage real-world data to make important decisions about the difference between what we can do today and what we want to do tomorrow, and beginning to think about, much like the automation side, doing better over time in mitigating an impairment problem from our roots.
That's great. Awesome.
Well, since I work quite a lot together with the police, for me it would be great if the technique developed for in-vehicle system could also be used to get better screening instruments for the police and help their work, especially when it comes to other drugs than alcohol. They need better screening instruments. So, yes.
Awesome. Thank you. Henrik?
Yeah, I think that, you know, what we like to see is just a much safer traffic environment, and to be able to very fast after you have entered the car understand that this is a risk person, and give that input to the vehicle. That's very important, I would say, in the future. So that, yeah, to bring down traffic accidents and so on. I mean, the car in the hands of a intoxicated driver is it's almost like a weapon. It's really, really hard and can be really, really dangerous.
Thank you for that. And Ricard?
Most exciting, I think, is that we have this technology now coming fast into cars for other purposes, and that we can also use this hopefully for intoxication and do something quite soon in a lot of cars, because next year we are going to see a lot of cars with these cameras, for example. So the speed at which we can do something, I think, is really exciting.
I think this is actually a great point, because in a way, the sensor technology will already be there, and there's an opportunity to just add on software and new algorithms and features that can help us, you know, get to some of this without, you know, so the kind of the barrier to entry will be lower. So that's a great point.
And if I can add a comment there, I hope that the industry will also work with the over-the-air updates to at a later point add software to the existing technology. That would be really good, not only for the newly produced cars, but also for the cars out there. Then that would be really exciting.
Awesome. Well, thank you all for joining us today. This was a really fascinating conversation. It's very important work that we're all doing here. And I hope we will get to do some version of this again. I think there's a lot more, we keep advancing and the advances are moving quickly. So I hope to see you all again. Thank you. Have a great summer, everybody.
The panelists had a fascinating discussion around the state of intoxicated driving research. Some key insight included, in-vehicle sensors may be the best alternative to challenge today's 100-year-old standard. Identifying the reasons behind a driver impairment may not be necessary to improve road safety. And diverse data is essential for developing effective intoxication detection systems, as well as so many more insights. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to our Human-Centric AI podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts for more episodes. We're also on social media, so please reach out to us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram to share any feedback you have on the show. Don't forget to rate us and comment with your feedback to help make the podcast more discoverable for others. Until next time, thanks for listening.